Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined today by George Goncalves, MUFG's head of U.S. macro strategy. It's Monday, April 1st, 2024. Welcome back to the podcast, George.
Great to be on, John.
Yeah, good to have you. And it's so funny, I almost tripped up there. It just feels weird to say Monday, as I think for years I've been recording these episodes on Tuesdays. I suspect there's an April Fool's Day joke out there somewhere, but I digress. So why don't we start things out by kind of marking to market, if you will. If memory serves, you were last on for your FOMC preview. At the time, you had an out-of-consensus call that the Fed would deliver, I think what you characterize as a dovish hold, in that they would keep three rate cuts in the SEPs, but not, you know, not change policy. And kudos to you, as that's exactly how that played out. That being said, since that FOMC meeting, we have had some decidedly hawkish commentary from, let's say, Fed President Bostic and Governor Waller. Chair Powell last week, I think it was on Friday, reiterated that they weren't in any rush to cut. I'll add in there that the data continues to come in pretty solid. So I guess the question is, have your views changed at all?
No, and I think we have to remain fluid in this environment and be data dependent, just like the Fed is data dependent. But I think we learned a lot from the Fed meeting and what typically happens in the weeks that happen after the Fed meeting. They usually try to fine tune the messaging and also convey what what their intent was. And I think what we learned at the meeting, which we were calling for a kind of a dovish hold. And what does that even mean? It really comes down to the Fed has a dual mandate, unlike other central banks. It has both the full employment as well as price stability and keeping inflation under control. For the past 18 plus months, they've been focused on the inflation side. They still are. However, they've been introducing this kind of balance of risks, and that it's not just the inflation data that matters, it's also the jobs data too. So that was made a lot more clear at the March meeting. And I think now that becomes a catalyst and a potential trigger for them to adjust policy, irrespective of inflation. Now, of course, if inflation were to start to accelerate from here, that would be a different story. But by and large, even if inflation bounces along and stays in this 2-3% range, not fully getting to their target, but if that happens and yet the labor market starts to soften or actually really decelerate and the unemployment rate starts to move quickly, they're going to be really focused on that side of their mandate. So I think we got that early kind of look into their what I consider pivot number two. Pivot one was in December when they were saying that they're not even thinking about cutting rates. And then they came out with introducing the three cuts as well as a much more dovish message in December. And then January, there was a little bit of uncertainty around the inflation data, which was running hot. And that led to some kind of concerns that, and the Fed wants to just make sure that, they're really find confidence to move to the next step, which is most likely an ease. And then we had also core PCE happen on the same day that Chair Powell spoke when the markets were closed on Friday. And that continues to at least move in the right direction. So I think that, look, it's never going to be a straight line on the inflation front, but the fact that they're focused on jobs data, that's going to be super critical for what happens next from the Fed. And even though they're talking or sounding a little bit more hawkish, it's more of a calibration to try to make sure markets don't get ahead of themselves. And even like having said that, markets haven't really moved too much. In fact, now the markets are almost in line with the way the Fed thinks. If the data gets comes out stronger, cuts get priced out. And when the data comes out slightly weaker, cuts come back in, or some sort of financial news takes place. So I think we're in a good spot for a calibration from the Fed side, market's interpretation, and we have less than three cuts or roughly around three cuts. So that's really where the Fed's head is at as well. So I don't think that it changes my view. I don't think it changes the Fed's reaction function either, that some of this data has been stronger. They are viewing this from more of a normalization standpoint. They want rates to come down because rates are still higher than where they should be based on like a some sort of neutral rate, which is a whole other story. But yeah, so I think that the first step would be normalization, which is worth 75 to 100 basis points minimum. And if you go deeper into easing, it's because the economy has gotten weaker or the jobs market is starting to lose steam. So yeah, I don't think anything's changed. This is a calibration issue. I probably went a little bit further than I should have, but I think that's where we're at, and makes really for the upcoming jobs data really important.
Yeah, and I think that's a message that you've been pretty consistent on. So, rates are high, and even after a cut or two or three, they're still going to be high, and they're still going to be restrictive. More perhaps we can talk a little bit more about the jobs data, a little bit later. But before we do, you did just publish your April monthly entitled "Macro to Markets Outlook: U.S. Economy and Markets: A Case of Have and Have-Nots." So before you go into the meat of the piece itself, I'd be curious exactly, what that title means as it pertains to, what's in the piece itself. And more specifically, you in there you have an interesting special topic where you focus on consumer health, and you say, quote unquote, "Consumers are increasingly balance sheet rich, but income statement poor," which I thought was pretty interesting. Why don't you take our listeners through that line of thought as well as the piece itself?
Absolutely. And this is something I've been building upon as a theme, being conscious of the fact that we can easily fall into narratives to help explain things, but this is more about the theme of what is taking place in different, sectors, industries, parts of the economy. And you can see it from how large corporates are versus smaller businesses and their access to credit, large versus small banks and their liquidity profiles. And their exposures to commercial real estate, public versus private markets, and how they operate differently. Even within, like the equity market itself, we have a pretty bifurcated, have and have-nots phenomenon where most of the gains have been tech for the last 18 months. And so, with like this concept of there's like a bifurcation happening in the U.S., I think it's many folks have kind of picked up on it, but I wanted to take it from a different angle, which is. Is this also true for the consumer? Because one of the things that we hear a lot, and again, it goes back to this jobs market, that we have a very resilient, robust jobs market, but and therefore by extension, you would associate that therefore there's a strong household sector and strong consumer. However, when you look at the data and you actually look more closely, you come away with the same sort of observation that there is a have and have-nots even within the consumer sector, which makes sense, but those sort of divides and disparities have gotten larger, both from the balance sheet side as well as from the income side. And on top of that, even though balance sheets may have definitely improved if you're exposed to financial assets as well as real estate, balance sheet rich, yet your kind of consumption. Is it coming from the wealth effect or is it coming from the earnings side and from your income, from the income statement side of things, where that also has seen a pretty big divide amongst the different cohorts and on the income spectrum. So that was the genesis of the analysis and try to get through like who owns the assets, are they feeling a lot wealthier and is it then resulting in greater consumption and through the wealth effect? Does housing wealth effect matter more than stock market wealth effect? And then ultimately, will this income issue come into question? Because if the wealth effect is not operating like it used to, and people are spending because they have either higher wages or jobs that pay more, then you're really susceptible to the income side. So that you can, many households are. Savings rates are very low. They're kind of going on credit. They're really stretching to maintain certain lifestyles or really going through pressing the discretionary spending button a little bit harder, that you run the risk that if you lose your job or something like that, then you have to make some more drastic changes or if income doesn't grow as fast as your spending pattern. So we did all that work and we kind of walked away with that coupled with the other topic, which is perhaps the reason why, even though we have the stock market at highs and we have very still low unemployment, but yet consumer confidence and consumer sentiment has been pretty low for the last couple of years. It's a reflection that inflation has ballooned a lot of the balances of loans and spending on things that used to be cheaper, pre-pandemic. So that reminder of having larger, credit balances and higher interest costs to pay for that is like a part two of the inflation whipsaw that households are still dealing with. And when you actually go and look at, the interest expense side of the overall spending from households, we're now at a point where the interest expense between mortgages and non-mortgage related consumer loans, so auto loans, credit cards, consumer loans, et cetera, that side, that sort of interest servicing on a reoccurring basis is now nearly equal to, or is equal to, the actual total amount of mortgage interest that a typical household is spending. And so now this interest channel is starting to really bite and impact, everyday household budgets. And so, when you look at all these things together, the wealth effect is not really overcoming for those in the 80% or under cohort, not in the top 20% of income earners or 20%, top 20% of asset owners. Now interest expenses starting to really, clamp down on actual discretionary spending potential, because now your interest cost is really eating into your budget. So when you throw all those things together, we walked away with the idea that no, wealth effect hasn't actually picked up yet. In fact, it's been slowing down even with these large gains in the stock market. It's going back down to more of the trend that we saw pre-2019 when you adjust for GDP. And so not even the wealthy are spending that much more. And then in the other cohorts, this interest cost is now starting to really be a serious consideration.
Yeah, sounds like sounds like the consumer's at risk, for sure. Switching topics, and I alluded to this earlier in the episode, but after we had I guess what it turned out to be a pretty uneventful PCE inflation release this past Friday when the markets were closed, we get what is an always important piece of data, the employment report this upcoming Friday. So why don't we leave our listeners with your thoughts on what you're expecting from that data release, what our listeners should watch out for, potential market reaction, that sort of stuff.
Yes, I will definitely do that. But I think it's good to remind everyone what took place last NFP and what the market was focusing on back then. If you recall, we had a decent revision to what was, initially a very strong January NFP from 353,000 jobs down to the, I think, high 240 to 47, I think it was. So that big decline in the revision from what was initially a big kind of blockbuster number over 300,000 to under 300,000. I think it reminded the markets that revisions are going to be an issue to contend with, and perhaps revisions are going to matter more than the actual headline numbers themselves. Because remember, the actual February report was 275 and still higher than consensus at the time, but it was the revisions that really caught everyone's attention, coupled with the higher unemployment rate, which is what I mentioned earlier at the start, that the Fed probably now going forward will be focused more on the unemployment rate and all of the kind of secondary data in the jobs market. The work hours, work weeks continues to stay low. The participation rate was also flat. So these are, I think that for the upcoming NFP, it's really going to be important to see the secondary data stats, not just the headline number that comes out, which Bloomberg consensus estimates is somewhere around 200,000. That might change before Friday, but nonetheless, 200,000 has been the average that most economists on average have been posting as the sort of monthly number to expect. It has typically, we've seen typically stronger than that. And even with that in February, we didn't see a pretty big market reaction in terms of a sell-off. So yeah, I'm going to look out for the unemployment rate, hours worked, and then the composition of the jobs created, and slightly discount the headline because it usually gets revised. And of course, watch for a revision to February as well. And if we get all of that, I think that would be relatively bullish for fixed income. It would really require, I think, a number north of 300,000 again, and the unemployment rate going down to see the bond market selling off further from here.
Yeah, and let's this is I think a good time to observe that the unemployment rate sits at 3.9%, just a tenth away from the Fed's forecast of the or the median Fed forecast for the unemployment rate at the end of the year. So you certainly could envision, blowing through that, at some point in the not too distant future. Let's see. So I guess for more, I would encourage our listeners to check out your piece, the recently published April Macro to Markets Outlook, U.S. Economy and Markets, A Case of Have and Have Nots. And if you are still not receiving George's strategy reports, check out the MUFG research portal at www.mufgresearch.com. You can sign up to receive you can find all of your favorite MUFG research, and you can sign up to receive it as well. Great stuff as always. Thanks for coming on the podcast, George.
Thank you, John.
And thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.